Okay, hello. Welcome to the Strings and Quantum Field Seminar. Today, we're very happy to have Luca Ciambelli from Brussels speaking here about recent work. And we're also lucky to have Rob Lee here, who's also on that work. But anyways, so Luca, please take it away.
All right, well, thank you very much, Dominic. Your pronunciation was perfect, by the way, on Ciambelli, so that's fine. thanks a lot, and thank you also for to Anthony for organizing as well and having me here. So yes, I will discuss about this ongoing work that I've been doing with Rob, who, as Dominic has said, is in the audience. This is on Lie algebraids and BRST. We had a couple of months ago a paper uploaded in the archive, but I suspect it's not going to be the last one. There are some ongoing things I will try to describe at the end of the talk. So, yes, and also feel free just to interrupt me, just unmute yourself, ask questions anytime, of course. So let me just give you a couple of motivations. I think that this work would fit into a bigger program that I would call this geometrization program. This is something we're used to in physics since a lot of time now. But if I have to give you the flavor of what I have in mind, I would say that there are a lot of physical theories that have been developed and considered, and the motivation might not arise from mathematics or from geometry. And there have been a lot of accounts in which putting these physical theories in a correct, I would say, geometric framework has had a lot of very successful consequences for the physical theory itself. For instance, for gauge theories in the 50s and 60s, their formulation in terms of principal bundles was very successful. And later on, with the advent of the BRST, there has been also some attempt at geometrizing it, as we will see. And I would say that the correct framework for gauge theories from the geometrical viewpoint are the so-called Atiyah-Lie algebraids that I will describe later. In this talk, we will see mostly Atiyah-Lie algebraids. And one of the important features is that if we talk only about geometry, then the picture is completely off shell and independent of any dynamics, and gauge independent by construction. So these are two features that will permeate my talk. And as we will see, I will just start from a classical gauge theory and just construct the geometric framework of Atiyah-Lie algebraids. And as a consequence, we will see that BRST symmetry, which is a symmetry that controls the quantization of the gauge theory in question, is automatically built in the geometry. And this is a part of a fascinating discussion that I think was firstly noted by Regge, Niemann, Thierry Mieg, and Laurent Beaulieu in the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, in which the geometric framework for classical gauge theories encodes BRST symmetry, which is a natural symmetry that appears from quantization of such theories. So there is a very interesting, in my opinion, interplay between classical geometries and quantum symmetries going on. Okay, so these are the motivation. Then the outline of the talk is, in the first part, I will just try to review as quickly as possible Lie algebraids. It's going to be quite technical. Please bear with me. I hope I can manage to bring you until the second part when things get where things gets more physical, perhaps. In the second part, I will focus on the specific case of Atiyah-Lie algebraids, which are the formulation for gauge, the correct framework for gauge theories. And then we will see indeed that gauge theories can be formulated on Atiyah-Lie algebraids and BRST symmetry is encoded naturally on these algebraids. And finally, time permitting, let's see if I have a couple of minutes spared, I will try to give you a flavor of what's going on for gravitational theories. I will not put a lot of references because most of them, well, all of them are already present in the archive paper I've written with Rob. And here I just want to mention that the first part of the talk is loosely based on Mackenzie books. Okay, so let me start. Let me start with Lie algebraids. So in this talk, I will be focused on what I will dub TLA, transitive Lie algebraids. They are vector bundles, which I will note A over M, with a specific feature that they have an anchor map, a so-called anchor map, which, as we will see, is a morphism, rho from A to the tangent bundle TM of M. And the defining property of transitive Lie algebraid is given by its bracket. So if I give, if I introduce two sections x and y of A and two smooth functions on M, then the Lie bracket on A is defined to have this property, namely it is linear with respect to f and g up to the derivative with respect to the vector field associated to the section X. What I mean by that is that since rho is a map from A to TM, then rho of X is just a vector field. You can think of it locally, just that X mu partial mu acting on the function. And this is the only source of nonlinearity in such a in the brackets defining transitive Lie algebraids. Okay, and the anchor map is required to be a morphism. By this I mean that the notion of algebraic curvature, this R will appear for other maps, and I will refer to it as algebraic curvature, which is just the faithfulness of the brackets, is preserved, is zero. So the brackets are faithful, okay, under rho. And notice in particular, as I was saying, that if X and Y are in the kernel of rho, rho is surjective but not injective, so it doesn't it has a non-zero kernel. So I just mean that if rho annihilates these two sections, then automatically the bracket defining transitive Lie algebraids instructs us that for these two sections, the bracket is linear. Okay. So let me continue. Let me define the non necessarily empty kernel of the anchor map rho. Let me call it the vertical subbundle. This is just a subbundle V of A. And it is unambiguously defined once we introduce the map rho. We can therefore define transitive Lie algebraids alternatively, introducing the pre-kernel bundle L. This is a bundle over M, over the same manifold M, such that we introduce a map iota from L to A, which is called an inclusion map, namely its algebraic curvature, as defined above, is zero. And then a transitive Lie algebraid can be defined by this exact sequence by requiring it being, by this short sequence by requiring it being exact. Okay, so this short sequence has the bundle L, A, and TM, all bundles over M. This is very important. And if required this short sequence to be exact, this means that rho acting on iota gives zero, and that TM is the quotient of the transitive Lie algebraid by the pre-kernel bundle L. Okay, and by the fact that for sections in the kernel of rho, the Lie brackets are linear, and iota is an inclusion, so it has zero algebraic curvature, we have immediately that the Lie bracket on L, on the full bundle L, are linear. And it is in this sense that L has a Lie algebra structure. Okay, very good. Now that we have the unambiguously defined quantities on transitive Lie algebraids, we can ask the question, is it possible to reverse the sequence? Namely, can we find a complementary subbundle to V in A? And which is, as I will show, equivalent to say, can we reverse the arrows here and create a short exact sequence. Now, this is not unambiguous, although, However, this is an ambiguous procedure because the complementary subbundle to VNA is ambiguous, and to lift such an ambiguity, one needs to introduce a Neresman connection, which is a map from TM to A, such that the image of TM under sigma is the complementary subbundle H. And the H here stands for horizontal subbundle. Once we have, therefore, that A globally splits into H and V, then we can introduce projectors given a section on A just by going to the bundle TM, for instance, and then go back with sigma to A. We just project to the horizontal part, whereas if we go with this function, with this map omega to L and back with the iota, we introduce the vertical projector to the vertical subbundle. One thing I should say is that we will refer to this map omega as a connection reform. This is the vocabulary used by McKenzie, and it is also constrained by the fact that also given the Neresman connection sigma, the reverse short exact sequence short sequence is exact. Notice in particular that given the Lie bracket structure on the transitive Lie algebraoid, the subbundle V is an ideal, by which I mean that if I consider brackets between horizontal and vertical and bracket between vertical and vertical, they both have a leg only on the vertical subbundle. Okay, this will be important later on. Okay, now that we have the structure of...
Can I ask a quick question on the last slide?
Absolutely.
Can you just clarify, so once you pick sigma, is it true that omega is completely determined by that, or are there two different choices that you make there?
No, so the map omega, once I pick sigma, I have a set of relationships between the different maps. So what happens is that let's see where I can write here. So if I take something in L, for instance, I act with iota and then I act with rho, this is zero. And the reverse is true for the other sequence, therefore, which means that I start with TM with sigma and omega, and they just compose a zero. That's how omega is constrained, because I want the short exact sequence also in the other direction, namely the kernel of omega. The kernel of omega is the image of sigma.
Okay.
Does
it mean one determines the other? Is that, or?
So they given sigma, we will see that omega contains independent data, but that they are specified on A.
So they both have curvature
because here I'm requiring R rho equals zero, this algebraic curvature I was saying. Uh-huh. That's also why I am allowed to specify the top from left to right short exact sequence. But on the other hand, these are not zero.
But isn't omega defined as the projection on H along V? Sorry, on V along H?
On V along H? Sorry, I don't understand the question.
So the question was, is omega uniquely defined once I choose sigma? I thought that, well, once I choose sigma, I have this direct sum decomposition, and then I just define omega as the projection onto V along H.
Yes, that what you're saying is correct. What I want to say is that it's not that what is contained into sigma is contained into omega, but once I specify sigma, I do specify omega. Yes.
That was just what I was asking.
Is it clearer?
Yeah.
It's not that they have the same content, but once you specify one, you have the other by the short exact sequence discussion. And as you were saying, it's indeed related to the fact that that indeed the kernel of omega is H, which is probably the comment that was made just before.
But maybe it would be useful to mention that you know, locally sigma contains a gauge field, and omega contains both the gauge field and the corresponding ghost.
Yes, that is.
There's more information in omega.
Thank you. That is exactly what I had in mind when I said that one specified the other, but they don't contain the same information. Sigma, as we will see, the Arisman connection contain the notion of gauge connection for the gauge theory later on, whereas omega contains the notion of gauge connection, but also its components contain the notion of ghosts. That's why I didn't want to make you think that they are just the same maps. They contain different data. Okay?
Yep, thanks.
Great. No, please interrupt me anytime, eh? Of course. That was very important, the clarification. Okay, so now that we have all this data, and also thanks to Rob, I already hint toward where I wanted to go later on with gauge theories. Let me introduce another important ingredient, which is how to take derivations on A. To do so, I will introduce an associate bundle, which is the bundle of derivations of an associated bundle itself. So let me introduce E as a bundle over M, another bundle. And I will call this Carly D a section of the bundles of derivations on E if they have this property under linearity, namely, given a section psi of E, the associated bundle, and the smooth function, the derivation acting on F psi is linear plus a term, which again depend by the vector field induced by the derivation. Namely, I introduce an anchor rho E from the derivations to Tm, and this is the leftover from the nonlinearity of the map. Therefore, one see clearly that if rho E annihilates D, is in the kernel D of rho E, then the map D itself is an endomorphism because it's linear, okay? Therefore, the bundle of derivation has a Lie algebraic structure where the pre-kernel is played by the endomorphisms on E. And I will draw in a moment an image, which a graphic representation of this, which hopefully will make it clear. Now, there E is a specific representation of A if we supply two morphisms, one between the algebraic A and the bundle of derivations, and the other between the two pre-kernel bundles, L and E. Now, since this is just a space of endomorphism, VE here is just converting to the matrix representation, okay? And pictorially, what is going on is that we have a short exact sequence here that defined my original transitive Lie algebra. We have introduced another Lie algebra, the algebra of derivations, with pre-kernel D endomorphisms, and we represent A on the space of derivations via this map phi E and the map VE. Okay, VE is just converting to the matrix representation on and E, whereas phi E is representing how section on A becomes derivations on E. Okay, and this is the next step indeed. Given a section on A, phi E of X is a derivation on E, and therefore we can introduce the exterior derivative on A, and I will justify in a moment why I call it so, which I will denote D hat, the exterior derivative on A, such that if I take the section of A and the associated under phi E derivation on E, and I act on a section of E, I require this to be equivalent to take the exterior derivative on psi and then act on the section on A, okay? I refer to D hat as the exterior derivative because I can introduce now via this definition, I can introduce the action of the hat on higher forms. So if I define now psi n to be a section of wedge n a star times e, so to be an n form on a with value on e, on the associative bundle e, and I call this space omega n, just by sum together all these spaces, as much as one can construct for TM the RAM complex. Here I construct this complex, omega ballet, A comma E, such that since it is valued on E, zero forms are just sections of E, like the form psi that I introduced here. Okay. And now, given this construction, the exterior derivative D hat is action on generic N form is just generalized from here via the causal formula. Okay, where now I justified, as I was saying, that D hat is an exterior derivative because it's nilpotent, and this comes about because phi e, the representation, to be a representation of A on the E has to be a morphism. And as a consequence, D is an impotent operator. And here, the causal formula there are a lot of signs here, might sound confused at first, but what I just mean is that one extends by requiring the action as for zero forms and adding a term to ensure linearity with respect to x1, x, n plus one. Okay, so we have introduced the hat formally, as a function of phi e. Now the question is, how do we characterize it in practice? How do we compute it? What is its form? And McKenzie, already in his books, provides us a solution, at least for the case in which E, the associated bundle E, is the pre-kernel L itself. And in that case, we use the connection reform omega that we discussed above to define the action of the head. So phi L x mu, where mu is a section of L, is equal to minus omega of the Li bracket in A, okay, of x and iota of mu. And this is just D hat mu acting on x, given our generic definition, okay? So in particular, we can act with D hat, for instance, with omega itself. And we can notice that if we add this bracket in L, then this procedure, the hat plus omega omega in L brackets, this produces just minus omega of the horizontal brackets of sections in A. Now, omega as by kernel H itself, as we saw before. So we saw that kernel of omega was equal to H. Therefore, this procedure here selects only the vertical component of this commutator. Now, you know that if you have a distribution, this distribution becomes integrable to be the tangent bundle of some space if and only if the Li brackets on H do not quit H itself, okay? Therefore, this quantity itself, we will call it curvature reform. And the let me just perhaps establish this notation, curvature reform. And the meaning it has this curvature is to, if the curvature is zero, then that subbundle H is an integrable distribution. That is the meaning. And we will see that it plays an important role in gauge theories. And I can anticipate that it will be associated to the gauge curvature F in a gauge theory. Okay, and in particular, we see also that by construction of this object, if now I insert a vertical section, I can just show that this is automatically zero. Now, this condition referred to as the Darboux-Maurer-Cartan-Ehresmann condition, and it is actually for the theory of principal bundles, as we will see, as it is imposed externally. And we will see, and we have just shown actually that here on the algebra, it is just a consequence of the formalism. Okay, so let me continue and let me then state the final result of this section, which is the very non-trivial task of splitting the hat into a horizontal part and a vertical part. And this is crucial later on for gauge theories because, as we will see, both the horizontal and vertical part contains very important information of the theory itself. In particular, the horizontal part of this, and here again I'm talking about the case of L, not E, not a generic E, will contain the gauge covariant derivative of mu. Whereas for the vertical part, for the moment, I just noticed that by explicit computation is just VL combined with omega, and I will define this to be S of mu, because as we will see, it is this vertical part that encodes the BRST transformation of the section mu. Okay? Great. So let me just stress a little bit what I just said, although for the moment we don't have yet cage theories. We are talking about generic transitively algebraids, but we already see that we can just extrapolate from what we did on L, the form of D hat on E, on a generic vector bundle E, and on a generic vector bundle E calling psi zero a section of such bundles, associated bundle, we have again the split of D hat into an horizontal and vertical, the horizontal containing now the gauge derivative for section of E, and the vertical as we will see clearly the BRST operator. We will call later on, indeed, this combination minus CE of psi naught times XD. And as we will see, this CE contains the usual notion of a Dei-Popov cost. Okay? And it is in this sense that we realize the Grassmann algebra that appears in algebraic treatment of BRST in terms just of exterior vertical algebra on the Lie algebraoid A. So from a more algebraic approach of such a symmetry to a more geometrized one. Okay, are there questions before I proceed to Atiya?
Sorry, could you remind me real quick, is the vertical exterior algebra here, this defined, depends on the connection, or like, is it the horizontal one that doesn't depend on the connection, or?
No, so these
forms that are horizontal are so well defined.
Both of them depends on the connection, as we will see. Both of them depends on the connection, omega and sigma. Omega that appears here and sigma that is used to define this. But the important thing is that in this procedure, as we will see explicitly, there appears these components here that will specify the Fadei-Popov cost. Okay?
Okay, yeah, in the vertical. Yeah,
but I will show that explicitly. Yeah? We will come back to that for sure. And if I remember, I hope I will ask you. Okay? Okay? Great. Very good. So let me move to Atiya. As I was saying, this discussion so far, and sorry if it was perhaps too technical, but it needed to introduce all the notions. And we will see that they just become what we are used to from physical formulation of gauge theories. But the next thing then is to relate this abstract construction to principal bundles. And this is done by introducing Atiya Lie algebraids, which are a specific set of transitive Lie algebraids. Now, I will assume that that there is in the audience a basic notion of principal bundles. I will not review that in details. And also in this part, I will be more sketchy. If you have more technical questions, please do not hesitate. But I want to get to the gauge theory part. So let me just introduce a principal bundle. The principal bundle is a bundle P over M, such that the fibers contain the Lie group of the theory, G, capital G. And locally, we can think of P just as U, an open set on M, times the Lie group G, seen as a manifold. On principal bundles, we have two group actions. And my convention, there are different conventions depending by the literature, but my convention is that the left action of the gauge group is associated with gauge transformations. And here I'm assuming that that I don't have boundaries in the manifold itself. The right action in the absence of boundary is just a redundancy of the gauge group G. Okay. Now, I want to relate this principal bundle P to the Lie algebraids discussion I had before, but I noticed that before, all this algebraoid and all this bundle I've introduced before are bundles over M itself. Now here, the natural candidate to relate to algebra is going to be the tangent bundle of the principal bundle, TP. However, TP is not a bundle over M, it's a bundle over P. And this, as I see it, as a disadvantage, and it comes about because, actually, we can show it comes about because of this right action redundancy, which in turn implies indeed TP being a bundle over P. The solution that link the principal bundle construction from to the Lie algebraoid is to mod the tangent bundle TP by the right action itself. This produces what is known in the literature as a TIA, Lie algebraoid, which I would call TP mod G. And this modding has two features. The first one is that it gets rid of right redundancy by construction of the bonding. And the second one is that one can show that TP mod G itself now is a bundle over M and not over P. And this is why it is called a TIA Lie algebraoid. And indeed, the short sequence defining TP mod G is excite. Okay, where I've introduced the pre-kernel LG, which now contains the adjoint representation of the group G.
Sorry, can I ask you, physically, you made a distinction between a group action being a redundancy and then the other group action being a gauge transformation. But what is that physically?
Yes, I can tell you physically. What does it mean physically? The right action, we do, in the absence of boundaries for the manifold, we do not see its physical implication. That's because when you go and you work on some local patch and you want to change from patch to patch, you will see that the connection that you define transform if you act with the left, from the left, with the gauge group, transform nonlinearly. And this is a typical way in gauge theories we see actually the left action of the group on the gauge connection. On the other hand, you can just try to act with on the right, and you just see that it does not change. In this sense, it's a redundancy.
By right and left action, do you mean the right and left actions of the fibers of the group just acting on itself on the fibers of the bundle?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I have a left action of the group and the right action of the group. But as I act with the left and I'm changing patches, this has a non-trivial effect on the gauge connection, whereas if I act on the right, this is just redundant.
I mean, but both do not have any physical implications, right?
Sorry, you mean observable implication? Absolutely not. They're still gauge group transformations, right? They're still gauge redundancies, if that's the question. It's just that one of the two is the true gauge redundancy we are used to, is the one that transformed the connection nonlinearly, as we are used to. It's still a gauge transformation. I'm not saying anything else. But the one on the right is just doing nothing except provoking that TP is not a bundle over M, essentially, mathematically. Is that clear?
Yes.
But they are still gauge transformations. Right? They don't. I'm not advocating that they have a concept of true symmetries whatsoever. Of course. All right.
It might be useful also to point out that the right action is kind of like a global group action. It doesn't act locally on each fiber, right?
Yes. This is
the gauge group is a lot bigger than the kind of. The action of the gauge transformations is a lot bigger than just the action of the right action.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Yes. But that is also the reason, that is also how you see that it's a redundancy locally, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That's a way of putting that indeed. But maybe, I don't know. Are there other questions? Yeah, so again, it has been a bit sketchy. I'm sorry about that, but we will see explicitly all these constructions. Sorry, I just had here a comment, but this is actually related to what we just discussed, which is if you take now a principal connection on the principal bundle, you typically require that to be equivariant, and the space of equivariant principal connections just map to the space of Ehresmann connections on TPMOG. And this is clearly the indication that the Ehresmann connection are going to be the gauge connection for the gauge theory I will address presently. Okay, so yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned that before stopping for questions, but let me now finally move to gauge theories. And the first thing I like to do is present a sort of table of comparison. And on the left, I just list the various quantity we are interested in physical gauge theories. And on the right, I will tell you what are the geometric counterparts. And then later on, I will show explicitly all this, but it's important at this point, since we have a lot of quantity introduced, to give them a name. So, well, first of all, given a physical gauge theory, I'm interested in a gauge group G, and how to introduce it geometrically is just via the principal bundle. So by considering a bundle such that the group acts on the fibers. Then once I have such a group, I'm interested in gauge connections and gauge curvature. And as we have already anticipated, and as we will see explicitly, these two are associated to the Ehresmann connection and to the what I call the curvature reform, which express the non-integrability of the distribution H in A. Then I may couple the gauge group with some charge matter, and charge matter are gonna be just the components of sections of associated bundles in the particular representation defining the charging of such matter under the gauge group. Covariant derivatives on gauge covariant derivatives for this charge matter are gonna be related to the horizontal part of the exterior derivative d hat on A, for of course the chain valued on E, on this particular associative bundle E. And furthermore, as we will see, this classical geometric picture on the right will capture also some quantum aspect of the gauge group of the gauge theory on the left, namely the BRST symmetry. And the Fadei-Popov-Ghost and the BRST operator S are gonna be interpreted in terms of the components of this connection reform, where I just convert it into the matrix representation on endomorphisms on E. Whereas the BRST operator S is gonna be dictated by the vertical part of the exterior derivative D hat, which therefore, that's also why I was stressing before, the splitting of horizontal and vertical of this D hat play a crucial role here. Okay, so let's see this specifically. To do so, I will have to go local. Everything that I did in the first section was globally well-defined sections. I need here to dirt my hands with indices, and I hope you will be able to follow. So I have introduced a set of bases. So I will call TA a basis of the pre-kernel L, E alpha a basis for H, EA, these two are capital E because they combine into a basis of gamma a basis for V, and partial mu is just D over DX mu, the usual coordinatized basis for the tangent bundle TM. And finally, for the associated bundle where charge matter will live, I will call EA a basis of that. And from now on, I will keep writing A, but I'm talking exclusively about Attiali algebra, it's TPMOG, okay? So let me start by establishing the connection as the gauge connection. So I introduce the specific case in which the associative bundle is L. I introduce nabla L. And the connection coefficient given these bases are just written in this capital A here. I introduce this connection coefficient. And as we saw, L is associated with the adjoint representation. So this is P times the adjoint of the group G on the Lie algebra G. And therefore, as I move from an open set UI to an open set UJ, I just transform with an element of the adjoint of the group. Okay. Now, by requiring that the globally well-defined nabla L on mu is patch independent, I just obtain, and this is a derivation we are also used to in physics, I just obtain that the gauge, the connection coefficients transform non-linearly as expected from gauge theories. Okay. Now, I still haven't done because I haven't related yet these connection coefficients with the Heresman. And this is what I will do next. To do so, I need to introduce the notion of trivialization. So locally, I will see the Attigliati algebraoid just as a direct sum of the prekernel and the tangent bundle to U. This is true only locally, because globally, I know that the only split I can have is just A is V plus H, and V and H are not necessarily related to L and TU, especially H with TU, right? And indeed, as I take an horizontal section and I trivialize it locally, it has potentially a leg on partial mu on TU, but also an extra leg on the prekernel L. And it is just this B here that contains the local expression for the gauge connection. So this B is associated to sigma, to the Heresman connection sigma. And just by requiring that the trivialization is a morphism, which is a defining property of a trivialization, we obtain that this B are just in one-to-one correspondence with the A connection coefficient we saw before. So we established the relationship between gauge connection in gauge theories and Heresman connections, of course, locally. And also, we can establish the gauge curvature. And to do so, we notice that if we take in L plus T U, here I should stress that I'm working locally, I take the bracket between two horizontal sections, I obtain something that is a line along the horizontal plus an extra piece that points toward the vertical. This extra piece is proportional to the coefficient FA mu nu, which if I just write down is the gauge curvature. Okay, so again, we establish another relationship, which is the fact that the gauge curvature controls the non-integrability of the Heresman connection. Okay, so far so good for the mapping. Now let's move to the interesting part, which is the BRST action. As I was saying before, thanks to Anthony's question, and hopefully this will clarify, the connection reform omega defined via the short exact sequence reversed can be written locally in terms of the coefficients omega A bar, and the basis E A times TA, where EA now is a basis of V dual. Okay. And now, as much as V is unambiguously defined and H is not, for the dual, V star is not unambiguously defined, whereas H star is unambiguously defined. And indeed, locally, we can just show that EA is given by TA minus the B Heresman connection coefficients locally. So that's why I was saying before that the connection reform omega contains two information. On the one hand, it contains an information on the gauge connection through the basis. And on the other hand, its components contains the information of the Faday-Popov ghost. And now I am in shape to show finally why I say the Faday-Popov ghost. So if I take the vertical action of the hat on a section of E, using the notation here, I just have minus AB psi B EA. This means that for the components psi A, I have this relationship. This relationship is already reminiscent of what is happening for BRST, but we can go a step further. And the built-in condition that the curvature reform is horizontal gets translates, if I just expanded, in the fact that S acting on C itself produced the commutator of C with C, which is the BRST transformation of the Faday-Popov ghost. And finally, by requiring that D hat is an important operator, which is associated to phi e being a morphism for the representation of A on the bundle of derivations, we just contracting with the vertical and horizontal form, which has established, working locally, that the BRST transformation, now it's clear that the operator S is the BRST operator, this nilpotent operator, the BRST transformation of the gauge connection gives the gauge covariant derivative of the ghost, another result established for BRST in gauge theories. Okay, so so one thing I could mention is that in other treatments, this condition is externally imposed because it's not built in the geometry, and is usually referred to as the Russian formula. And here, for people that are familiar with this notation, we see that the Russian formula is typically externally imposed, as I was saying, and here we see that is a built-in feature of the geometry. Okay, do I have still... so first of all, sorry, let me just take questions in case.
Sorry, can you clarify, the Russian formula, is it supposed to be equivalent to this transformation of the ghost, or is it a different...
Great, thanks for the question. It gives me a moment to clarify it, sorry. Yes, so this equation, the fact that the curvature reform is horizontal, was not a condition. It was automatically built in the formalism. We just found it as part of the definition of the curvature reform. Now, if you were to do local BRST on fibers of the principal bundle, like Thierry Mieg and Laurent Beaulieu did in the 80s, this condition was not built in because they were not talking about Atelier algebras, and they had to impose it externally. Now, they called this condition, actually Stora called this condition the Russian formula, okay? And which Thierry Mieg claimed that he wrote it first. So anyway, I don't want to enter that debate. But anyway, that condition was externally imposed on the system in order to find this transformation, because this BRST transformation of the Fedej-Popov ghost follows automatically by requiring that this condition being true. You expand the left-hand side of this and you find this, sorry.
Okay, what but it's like equivalent, because normally I feel like people just write down the SC equals a half CC as kind of just the BRST transformation of the ghost, like almost yes. As a definition, yeah.
And okay. that follows from this equation.
Okay, so the two are kind of are equivalent, is that correct? Or is there more in the Russian formula besides that? Or?
No, they're equivalent, they're equivalent.
Okay.
So if you impose this, you get automatically this. But there's no extra content to that equation.
So is this, I just looked up Russian formula on Google, and I got a bunch of stuff about Formula One in Russia. So the Russian formula, is it just that the gauge part of the BRST operator is equal to zero? Is that what we would, how would we write it in usual physics?
You would write it like this. So let me tell you very quickly. So what you would do is say, that's not really physics. That's the, if you want the 80s Thierry Mieg and Laurent Beaulieu interpretation of this, you would just say that A, the gauge connection, is not really just a gauge connection. It contains two pieces. It contains a space-time gauge connection plus a ghost. Okay, you push them together. And on the principal bundle, you can have this formulation locally. This is extremely local formulation. And then you would just construct F, which is D hat of A hat, where D hat here, sorry if I use the same name, is D plus S. And then indeed, as you are saying, then you require F to be purely horizontal. So to have only the usual DA term. And then if you do so, and you require, and that's maybe why you find this relationship, and you require, of course, that D hat square to zero, it has to be the nilpotent operator, you obtain this transformation over here. Now, this construction, although it was very interesting, and this is a very interesting construction, is extremely local on the fibers. And we have just established the geometric origin of this construction from Atiyali algebras. Is that clearer?
Yeah. I just think that could you maybe say a little bit more about what the scope of this formalism is, as far as that, you know, there are theories where the BRC operator is bigger, right? Where the BRC operator, we have further things in the BRC content.
So, okay, so very good. I don't know if you're going there, but let me just say that indeed this structure is completely off-shell engage independent, as I was saying. And indeed, when you introduce dynamics, you can relax the BRC operator and make it nilpotent only on shell. Is that what are you hinting toward?
Or are you talking about maybe I can follow up at the end. I was just hinting at maybe redundancies of
There is a question.
I'll ask at the end.
Okay, very good. We can discuss at the end. But anyway, there is a very interesting question of reducibility of parameter that I think Friedman Brandt discussed in the past that is relevant also for this. But we can discuss again later, for sure. Right, great. Are there other questions? I'm almost there. Right? So do I have 10 minutes?
Yeah, I think you have 10 more minutes and then we take questions.
All right. Okay, so let me perhaps therefore very quickly go through the next point, which is indeed, we haven't introduced any dynamics and we are completely off-shell engage independent. And the formulation, at least the one in the first part of the talk, was completely global and diffeomorphism invariant. So at this stage, talking about gravitational theories versus gauge theories on a fixed background, it's just a matter of introducing extra structure, as I will now show. Okay, to talk about gravitational theories in this construction, we necessarily will have to do so in first order formulation. And in first order formulation, the central object is this F subscript G, which is the principal frame bundle. Okay, so it's the bundles of frames. And indeed, the structure of this, the structure group of this F will be a subset of GLDR for a manifold of dimension D. Now, we typically think in first order of taking that to be Lorentz, so 1, D minus 1, but I'm open here, so that's why I keep it G. I'm open to various possibilities. For instance, there's some interest, of course, in a Lorentzian G structure, like Carroll structure or Galilean structure, and in general, any subset of GLDR, any subgroup of GLDR would be possible in what I'm gonna say. Okay, and then if I focus on the principal frame bundle, the Atiyali algebraids for the principal frame bundle is TFG mod G. And I can construct it as I did for gauge theories before. And the only difference is that I have to supply essentially some matter fields for gravity. And although we don't typically call them matter fields, and what are these matter fields are the solder form and the Schouten form. Now, I refer to the solder and Schouten, I distinguish them, and I refer to the solder form as the map from TM to the associative bundle E with the representation RG. Okay, and I just distinguish, because in principle E and E star are not the same, the Schouten form to be the map to E dual instead of D. Okay, and this here is just the associative frame bundle. So sometimes people would call it the fake tangent bundle. Okay, and these two ingredients are necessarily for gravity. And here I'm not even introducing a pseudo-Riemannian structure on TM. So what I will do doesn't have necessarily a metric that comes along. And then in the gravitational theories in our language, they're gonna just be an announcement of what we saw, in which we define the short exact sequence for the transitive Lie algebraid associated with the principal frame bundle FG, and we add the associated bundles E and E star. I define here theta hat and p hat to be the combination of theta and p with the anchor map rho. And as I will see, these are the quantity I'm going to be interested in a moment. Okay? So these are all the structure I need. And let me just establish a couple of results which are known. The first result is that there should not be ghosts associated to solder forms. So this, in our case, comes about automatically if we refer to theta hat as the solder form, which is the one that combines the anchor map and the solder form from TM. I go to A via this theta hat, so via rho, and this is automatically a map from H to E. So there's no room to have ghosts associated to this. It's only about H, okay? And this is already one important feature of our construction, because also this condition, the absence of ghosts for the solder form, was an external assumption in the original treatment of BRST for gravity. The second result, which is very similar to what we have discussed about the Russian formula, and I thank you for the question so that you will see here what I mean, is that if we construct the torsion, just as the gauge covariant derivative of the solder, by construction of the solder we have introduced, it is automatically horizontal. And if I just explicitly write down what I mean by that, I just obtain the BRST transformation of the solder form itself, which is the one I expect from BRST formulation of gravity, where I have, importantly, introduced the Faddei-Popov ghosts for the G structure group. And finally, as a final comment on this very little discussion on gravitational theories, I have just introduced Faddei-Popov ghosts for the structure group G, but there is no room in this off-shell construction to diffeomorphism ghosts. Now, I'm not saying that they might not arise once we introduce a dynamics, but at least from this completely off-shell engage-independent discussion, there's no a natural ghost associated to the diffeomorphisms, because the structure we established was diffeomorphism invariant to begin with. Now, in some examples of results obtained in gravitational theories and BRST, we know that these diffeomorphism ghosts, they don't play the same role as the G ghosts, and what I call the G ghosts, which in typical example would be the Lorentz ghost. For instance, if I consider gravitational anomalies, we know that we can move all the diffeomorphism ghost dependence of the gravitational anomaly to the Lorentz ghost, so that the diffeomorphism ghosts do not contribute to gravitational anomalies. Now, this does not allow me to conclude that diffeomorphism ghosts are not relevant, but at least we have some indication that they play a different role. And this is seen also from our geometrical construction. Okay, so this is all I wanted to say on gravity. This was just a little flavor. Part of it is ongoing research, which I think is very stimulating, but let me now wrap up and conclude. So what we have shown is that Lie algebraids, and in particular Atiyah Lie algebraids, offer the correct, or if you want, the natural framework to discuss geometrically gauge theories. As I was saying, the construction was then independence by any dynamics. And in particular, thinking about the Russian formula or the absence of ghosts for the solder form, all these assumptions that in the past were imposed externally on the system are just part of the geometry. So one, I think, important achievement was to show that these conditions, they could be imposed externally in physical theory, but if you set it up in the correct geometric framework, they are just the built-in structure. And finally, let me stress again, because this is, I personally find it extremely fascinating, there is this deep connection between classical geometries and quantum symmetries. Here I have not introduced anything of the quantum world, and I just see that BRST is there. And BRST historically was found from quantization of gauge theories. So there is something deeper, I think, at the level of the geometric formulation that I think is still to be unraveled. And very quickly, if I may, just a couple of outlooks. So the first one is, of course, to include dynamics. We have seen that some of the questions might be different in the presence of dynamics. I haven't mentioned even anti-ghosts, which are going to be relevant. Another motivation we had in mind originally was to add the boundary and corners to the discussion. Of course, the last comment I made about the geometric quantization, or rather the interplay between classical geometries and quantum symmetries, I think it's something that is really worth investigating on. And lastly, related to boundary and corners, I think there could be an insight from what we have done by cracking open our structure in different subregions and study entanglement. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for this nice talk. There were already a couple of questions and discussions which sort of started during your talk, so I'd encourage people to pick up again or some other questions too. Ben.
I don't know if I have a bad connection, Dominic, but you froze for a moment, but I guess you were just asking if there are questions, so we can just go on, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I guess I have a few questions. First of all, thank you very much for the talk. I guess the first question is, well, there are no dynamics, so I guess it doesn't make sense to ask what the heuristic homology looks like here, right? But then I guess a question is, how about, does this framework work well if we treat more complicated gauge symmetries as, for example, redundant gauge symmetries, and we try to work like from the point of view of L infinity algebraoids or more complicated structures for those gauge symmetries, where we can have ghosts for ghosts, where we can have BRST operators that have more intricate.
It's of course an amazing question, right? I hope I can tell you even more in a couple of months or so, or maybe a couple of years. I don't know. But what I can tell you now is that what I believe is that this is essentially the building block. For instance, if you want to introduce anti-ghost, a procedure would be to get together A, this algebra A, and A star, the dual algebra, so that in one direction you increase the ghost number, in the other you decrease. If you want to study about, if you want to talk about L infinity algebraids, you might want to release some of the assumptions here. So, for instance, here I've been talking only about Lie algebraids. So for instance, what I've assumed is that there is a skew symmetric Lie bracket on A, and I have a morphism rho. Now there are more general formulations of algebraid where you don't need to require skew symmetricity of the brackets itself, right? And this is crucial to some theories. So I'm not saying that this geometric formulation would encompass everything I have in mind or one can build. Indeed, the ghost of ghost procedure is something that is a little bit a step farther, but I think this would constitute the natural zero point to ask these questions, you know?
It would be. So then my second question is, what is the relationship of this maybe to the BV formalism? Because it would be really interesting to see how I can start by putting some cohomological vector field and by just asking that it squares to zero to see how I recover, to reinterpret that in this geometric fashion as you're doing. So to not require that Q squares to zero, but rather to put enough geometric structure to find a general enough geometric structure that encompasses all the way that Q could square to zero in all those BV terms.
In this BV construction, the cohomological vector field squaring to zero is something that you essentially construct, I don't know how to say, but not out of the geometry, out of the algebra. It's an algebraic formulation in BV, and I mean that's an interesting and very well done structure. I'm not criticizing at all. On the other hand, I think that there could be a geometric reformulation of that thing. Now there is a relationship between cohomological vector fields in BV and this structure if you go through the dual algebra A star. But it is still something that I'm not able to say to tell you how it's gonna work, but I can tell you that there is room there, indeed, and it has to pass through A star, and I think geometric formulation in what in the sense I'm saying here in this talk, geometric formulation of BV could unravel important features indeed. I don't think it's gonna be just a reformulation. I think it's gonna, because for instance, these Russian formulas, for people that are familiar, have been a sort of hard thing to understand in the past, especially 40, 30 years ago. Now there are various formulations in which it seems to come up more natural, but it still looked so far to me, and the literature is extremely vast, so I'm not making a, you know, claiming, but it looks to me very much imposed from exterior. And the way it arises here in such a geometric way, I think it's not a reformulation. I think it's something deeper of the theory.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's very interesting.
Very, very interesting question. Thank you very much.
It was just mentioned something about, yeah, like the BRST cohomology. Can you not start getting at that from this exterior derivative operator that you defined? Is that not gonna, or is like what prevents you from studying that cohomology?
There's nothing that prevents me. There is an off-shell formulation of cohomology, of BRST cohomology, but there are also formulation of BRST cohomology such that the S operator squared to zero only on shell. Okay, such that S squared is equal to something, and this something is proportional to the equations of motion of the specific dynamics you have. This is something that I'm not able to see there here, of course, because I don't have introduced dynamics.
Okay, so there's just another.
Can I just say the reason why I pulled myself back from asking about BRST cohomologies, because I believe that with this you can only obtain that Chevalier-Eilenberg part of the BRST cohomology. You cannot obtain the resolution of the equations of motion because there are no dynamics. You cannot start talking about a resolution of the equations of motion.
Absolutely. Let me formulate differently what I was saying. There are three operators here. There is the Chevalier-Eilenberg operator you can consider, and that is off-shell and completely included in this discussion. There is the Deram exterior derivative, and that is off-shell and completely included in the discussion. And then there is the what we call sometimes delta, little delta, which is the field variation operator. This is also a nilpotent operator that enters in the formulation of BRST operators on shell. Now that thing, I don't have any appearance in this off-shell formulation because I don't have a field content. I don't have an action that I vary, right? The delta that I'm talking about is the same delta that appears in the covariant phase space formalism. It's the delta that varies the action, right? It's this exterior thing that there is through Anderson variational bicomplex. But in the language of BRST, it appears just as an nilpotent operator. And you can combine that delta with what I call here S and with what I call little d, and you can make all these together into a bigger operator that is still nilpotent, of course, because they're singularly nilpotents and anti-commuting. And that is very interesting.
So if you did that, you could sort of do something like this construction on the covariant phase space. And you might end up seeing this. Well, that's where you might see this cohomology.
Yeah. And yeah.
Presumably that's also a way to get at the BV formulation too, because there's all sorts of things. Once you start doing covariant phase space, it talks really naturally, I think, to BV stuff. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you know, it's like saying you have a pseudo-Riemannian structure and you haven't imposed Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian, right? You have a big deal of things you can do, but still you need to add some stuff that will determine the dynamics, and it's not completely. It's based on the geometry, but there are features that are independent by the geometry and the dynamics. actually, the covariant phase space formulation came from the variational bicomplex of, well, I mean, it's not came. I would say it's related. Let's say it better. It's related to the variational bicomplex formulation on Anderson, which is also what was used later as a base for the BV formulation. So, of course, all these things are intertwined at the basis, but it's... introducing dynamics is not simple, but at the same time, I think it's not going to be that hard either, because the important thing was to put together the structure of a TLE algebras, which I think is something that is not appreciated from the BRST community. So for instance, what Thierry Miege and Laurent Beaulieu were doing in the 80s and the 90s was to take a fiber of the principal bundle and put together, summing together, the RAM and Chevalier. So, you know, one forms and ghosts, and degree one ghosts. And of course, you get a huge deal of things. Eh? They work out a huge things of a huge deal of things, but they had to impose a lot of conditions from outside.
I think that discussion is very interesting, especially with respect to your last topic, subregions and entanglement. I recently read the paper on flat entanglement spectra of Harlow, Dong, and Marrow, and it seemed very interesting the way that they used this covariant phase-space formalism to prove that in Pictharia states, entanglement spectra is stable, and there is no comment on what the BV formalism does there. They do some canonical quantization, some pattern. Might be interesting to see what BRST says about that.
Yeah. This was our original motivation with Rob. We really wanted to go toward that understanding, but then, of course, you know. but yes, definitely. I think that's.
All right. I'm just gonna stop the recording now.